I want you to imagine something for a second. It's midnight. You step out into your backyard.
Maybe you're just, you know, trying to get some fresh air.
Right, or a look at the stars. But instead of darkness, you find your entire neighborhood bathed in a 5-kilometer-wide beam of sunlight.
Which, I mean, the immediate psychological reaction to that would be pretty profound.
Oh, totally. We aren't talking about the glow from a street lamp here or a police helicopter spotlight sweeping past. This is actual sunlight beaming straight down from the sky in the dead of night, casting shadows on your lawn.
It mimics the opening sequence of a science fiction invasion film, really, triggering this very primal confusion about the natural order of day and night.
But we are not talking about science fiction today, because today is Tuesday, July 14th, 2026.
And just 5 days ago, on July 9th, the FCC officially approved a satellite designed to do exactly that.
To turn the night into day.
Exactly.
So we are pulling all of our insights today from an incredibly comprehensive analysis by Majid Gurbaningjad. He's an advanced systems architect at Teching Game.
Yeah, and his report is titled The Space Mirror Revolution. Reflect Orbital and Arendelle 1.
And our mission for this deep dive is to explore the sheer mechanical audacity of how this technology works and, you know, unravel why it has sparked such a unprecedented backlash from the global scientific community.
Not to mention figuring out the broader implications of beaming sunlight into the dark. The report is honestly a masterclass. It breaks down the intersection of extreme orbital engineering, raw economics, and environmental ethics.
Yeah, the sheer material science required to pull this off is staggering. So the California startup driving this, Reflect Orbital, they're gearing up to launch their experimental satellite, Arendelle 1, later this year on a SpaceX Falcon 9 rocket.
Right.
And for the fantasy fans, yes, Arendelle is a direct reference to the Lord of the Rings character who carries a star across the sky.
It is brilliant branding for a startup, you have to admit.
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. But the actual hardware is where my mind just gets blown. They are parking this satellite in low Earth orbit, roughly 625 kilometers above us.
And the payload is an 18 by 18 meter steerable thin film reflector. So that is 324 square meters.
Which is essentially the size of a baseball diamond.
Right, made of aluminized mylar. And it has to launch folded up into a highly compact chassis just to share the rocket payload.
Wait, so it has to unfurl itself in the vacuum of space?
Yeah. And unfurling a structure that massive and that fragile in microgravity is a massive hurdle. I mean, you are dealing with a material barely thicker than a potato chip bag.
Oh, wow.
When it deploys, it immediately faces extreme thermodynamics. The side facing the sun expands rapidly while the shattered side freezes and contracts.
And they have to do that without tearing the mylar.
Right, while maintaining a perfectly flat reflective surface to bounce that light and create a controlled 5 to 6 kilometer footprint down on Earth.
Which requires phenomenal tensioning systems, I imagine.
Definitely. They actually validated the core physics in March of 2024 by mounting a 6 square meter version on a hot air balloon.
Oh, right. Using robotic controls to successfully direct sunlight onto ground-based solar panels during astronomical twilight.
Exactly.
But I mean, hanging from a balloon floating lazily in the stratosphere is a very different game than operating in orbit. Here is where it gets really interesting.
The orbital mechanics.
Yes. Because Arendelle 1 is screaming across the sky at 7.5 kilometers per second. It is constantly moving relative to the surface of the Earth, which is also, you know, curving away from it.
So to keep that beam of sunlight locked onto a single target on the ground, the mirror has to constantly pivot and readjust its angle of incidence.
The source material notes it has to repoint every 4 minutes. Trying to visualize this physics problem, it's like you are riding a roller coaster going thousands of miles an hour.
Okay.
And you are trying to keep a tiny laser pointer perfectly steady on a single moving ant on the ground below you.
That is a perfect analogy. The mechanical stress of executing that pivot every 4 minutes is immense.
Because it's constantly shifting its center of mass.
Exactly. You are asking a spacecraft to manipulate a 324 square meter sail without tearing it or depleting its limited thruster fuel.
Which must be why Reflect Orbital's official documentation leans so heavily on their automated safety protocols.
Yeah, they outline 3 main pillars to ease public concern. First, the light is entirely contained within that 5 to 6 kilometer footprint.
So the optics prevent it from bleeding out and causing widespread light pollution.
Right. Second, if a gyroscopic failure occurs, the light can be instantly shut off by simply tilting the mirror a few degrees away from Earth.
Okay, that makes sense.
And third, their targeting software is allegedly sophisticated enough to intentionally black out sensitive areas, routing the beam around research observatories or protected wildlife habitats.
Okay, let's unpack this, because this is where the entire narrative starts to fray for me.
How so?
Well, we are talking about hypersonic precision targeting from 625 kilometers up, managing thermal expansion on fragile mylar, and complex gyroscopic maneuvers every 4 minutes.
It's a massive undertaking.
The engineering budget for that level of hardware is astronomical. If you're going to go through all of that trouble, the business model has to offer a massive, undeniable economic payoff.
When you're seeing a disconnect there.
I mean, the startup's proposed use cases just do not match the physics.
Yeah, the disconnect between their marketing pitch and the physical reality is pretty glaring in the report. Reflect Orbital is pitching this as a revolutionary tool for nighttime solar energy production.
Right, illuminating solar farms after dark to keep the grid fed.
They are also highlighting disaster response, offering instant illumination for search and rescue teams.
And pitching it to the industrial sector to allow construction crews to work overnight without relying on noisy, highly polluting diesel generators.
It sounds incredible until you look at the raw math, specifically the lux output.
Exactly. The math completely breaks down when you look at the light intensity reaching the ground. Direct sunlight on a clear day is roughly 101,000 lux.
And a full moon is about 0.1 lux.
Right. Arendelle 1, this marvel of modern space engineering, maxes out at 0.5 lux on the ground.
So it is barely four times brighter than a full moon.
Barely.
To contextualize how weak that is, the inverse square law of light dictates that as light travels, it disperses and loses intensity exponentially.
So they are taking a limited collection of photons and forcing them to travel 625 kilometers through atmospheric interference.
Exactly. By the time that light hits the ground, 0.5 lux is essentially deep twilight. It is enough ambient light for your eyes to perceive vague shapes.
But you couldn't safely navigate uneven terrain, let alone read a blueprint.
No, absolutely not.
Which makes the solar farm pitch laughable. The report calculates that a standard 100-watt solar panel would generate less than 0.5 watts of power under this space mirror.
That is less than 0.5% of its normal daytime efficiency.
Because solar cells have a threshold. They need a minimum activation energy to overcome their band gap and start moving electrons.
And 0.5 lux barely wakes the panel up.
Trying to light a solar farm from 625 kilometers up is like trying to water a single houseplant using a crop duster airplane.
That's spot on. By the time it reaches the ground, the energy has dispersed too widely to be of any practical use.
And if we connect this to the bigger picture, the alternatives currently available on the market absolutely bury this technology.
For the solar energy sector, the prevailing goal is grid stability at night. A utility-scale Tesla Megapack battery costs around $1.5 million.
Which stores massive amounts of energy generated during actual daylight.
Right, and deploys it at night with zero moving parts and zero orbital launch risks. That is an infinitely more efficient capital investment than launching a mirror.
And the construction pitch is even worse. OSHA and general construction safety standards require a minimum of 20 to 50 lux just to walk around a site safely.
Let alone operate heavy machinery.
Right. And Arendelle 1 Pros provides 0.5 lux. You're looking at spending millions of dollars on a Falcon 9 launch, running anywhere from $1 to $5 million just for the write-up.
For a satellite that will degrade in the atmosphere and die in 5 to 7 years.
All to give a construction crew 0.5 lux. A site manager can go to a hardware store, drop 500 bucks on a standard industrial LED floodlight, and instantly get over 1,000 lux of perfectly controlled, localized light.
Which really highlights how the economic argument is completely hollow.
So it's basically just marketing.
It leads to the conclusion that the current business model is operating more as a speculative marketing concept designed to secure early stage venture capital rather than a competitive industrial solution.
They are selling the science fiction appeal of controlling the sun.
Precisely.
And the absurdity of that economic math is exactly why this isn't just fading away as a failed startup pitch. The scientific community is treating this as an active, immediate threat.
Oh, absolutely. The regulatory review process at the FCC was flooded with nearly 2,000 public comments and formal objections.
We're talking about heavyweight institutions, too. The American Astronomical Society, Dark Sky International, the Royal Astronomical Society.
They're looking at this 0.5 lux output and screaming that the collateral damage to our planet is catastrophic.
Yeah, Betty Kiyoko, the institutional affairs officer for the European Southern Observatory, explicitly labeled this an existential threat to optical astronomy.
She stressed that humanity is on the verge of actively severing its oldest, most fundamental connection to the cosmos.
And Tony Tyson, the chief scientist for the Vera C. Rubin Observatory at UC Davis, summarized the nightmare scenario for researchers.
He simply said, "Imagine the sky filled with moons."
That phrase is haunting. Imagine the sky filled with moons. Because ground-based observatories are already losing the battle against satellite constellations.
The report details that currently, 15 to 20% of astronomical images are damaged.
Because telescopes rely on incredibly sensitive long-exposure photography to capture distant galaxies, right?
Yes. And when a highly reflective object crosses that field of view, it leaves a blazing streak of light across the sensor, completely ruining the data.
And Reflect Orbital has stated their ultimate goal is a commercial constellation of 50,000 of these space mirrors by 2035.
Researchers project that a constellation of that size would ruin 60 to 80% of all astronomical images.
It would effectively blind our ability to study the universe from the surface of the Earth.
And the disruption extends far beyond telescopes. The biological implications of sweeping artificial light across the night side of the planet are severe.
Because ambient light pollution fundamentally disrupts circadian rhythms.
Exactly. In humans, that directly correlates to melatonin suppression and chronic sleep disorders.
Hmm.
But for ecological systems, it triggers a devastating cascade.
Like with nocturnal animals.
Yeah, countless species of amphibians, mammals, and birds rely on absolute darkness for nocturnal hunting, for navigation during migration, and for reproduction cycles.
So a 5-kilometer beam of moving light fundamentally rewires the environmental triggers those ecosystems depend on.
It's massive.
And think about the sheer kinetic danger in the sky. We established that the mirror has to physically pivot every 4 minutes. Majid's report warns that during those massive gyroscopic adjustments, the angle of the mirror will inevitably create sudden, intense flashes of concentrated sunlight.
Which is a huge aviation hazard.
Imagine you are an airline pilot flying a commercial jet at 35,000 feet, relying on your night vision, and you are suddenly hit with a blinding flash of mirrored sunlight.
Or consider other satellites. Lower orbiting satellites use delicate star tracking cameras to navigate.
Oh, right. They rely on the absolute blackness of space to map the constellations.
Exactly. A sudden blast of light from Arendelle 1 could instantly overload and fry those navigational sensors.
That's terrifying. And if they ever reach that 50,000 satellite goal, the atmospheric and orbital life cycle risks become the dominant threat.
Because satellites in low Earth orbit have a short lifespan. They will have to retire and deorbit thousands of these massive fails every single year.
Which drastically increases the probability of triggering Kessler syndrome, right?
Yes. The cascading chain reaction of orbital collisions that could render low Earth orbit entirely unusable for generations.
Plus, retiring them means intentionally burning them up in the atmosphere.
And burning 324 square meters of mylar injects raw aluminum particles directly into the upper atmosphere.
And the atmospheric chemistry of that is highly volatile. It alters the Earth's albedo, reflects heat in unpredictable ways, and actively depletes the ozone layer.
It's a huge concern.
The astronomical community is treating this like an unprecedented disaster, but we have actually opened this Pandora's box before, haven't we? Has anyone ever tried this?
They have, which brings vital historical context to the current debate. Russia attempted a very similar orbital mirror concept back in the 90s.
I remember reading about that. Project Znamya, right?
Yes. In 1993, the Russian space program executed Project Znamya. They deployed a 20-meter reflective structure from the Mir space station.
Did it actually work?
Partially. It successfully bounced a 5-kilometer spot of light across Europe at night. However, subsequent tests suffered severe mechanical failure.
Oh, like what?
The deployment mechanisms jammed and the sails tore. But more importantly, the public outcry was immediate and fierce.
Even back then?
Even 30 years ago, people were deeply disturbed by a government unilaterally deciding to alter the night sky.
So what does this all mean? We have a private startup pushing a business model that fails basic cost-benefit analysis.
Right.
We have 2,000 furious scientists and environmentalists outlining existential threats to optical astronomy, global ecosystems, and aviation safety.
Not to mention the historical failure and public rejection of the Znamya project.
Exactly. And yet, knowing all of this, the FCC officially approved it 5 days ago. How does a project with this much liability possibly get a green light?
The nuance lies in the exact parameters of the license the FCC granted. They did not approve a commercial constellation of 50,000 space mirrors.
Okay, so what did they approve?
They granted a strict limited duration license for exactly one experimental satellite, Arendelle 1.
Just one.
Right. The source material attributes this decision directly to the Trump administration's test and learn regulatory philosophy.
Test and learn. What does that actually mean in practice?
The stated argument for this approach is to prioritize rapid innovation and real-world data collection over preemptive bans.
I see.
The administration's framework favors allowing a controlled physical demonstration to identify the actual engineering hurdles and market viability before drafting permanent regulations.
Ensuring the nation maintains a first-mover advantage in commercial space tech.
Exactly. It's about staying ahead.
But it is essentially allowing a private tech company to use the global night sky as a beta testing environment. And people are intensely uncomfortable with that.
Understandably so.
The social media reaction has been explosive. Hashtags like Save the Night Sky are dominating algorithms right now.
It is not just astrophysicists publishing white papers anymore.
Right. It is everyday people reacting to a perceived violation of nature. The quote from the report that perfectly captures this cultural friction is, "The sky belongs to everyone, not a startup."
Which raises an important question about legal sovereignty, and international space law experts are watching this very closely.
Because it navigates a massive legal gray area, right?
Huge. The Outer Space Treaty of 1967 established that no nation can claim sovereignty over space. A satellite operates in international territory.
However, Arendelle 1 is actively beaming physical photons down into the sovereign airspace and onto the soil of independent nations.
Precisely. If a country decides that artificial light from an American commercial satellite is a pollutant disrupting their environment, do they have the legal right to block it?
Wow. The current treaties simply never anticipated private companies manipulating the sun.
They really didn't. By granting this single experimental license, the FCC has forced a reckoning for the future of international space law.
It is incredible how quickly the scope of this expands. We started this deep dive talking about the mechanical stress of unfolding an 18-meter Mylar sail in microgravity.
Then moved to the sobering physics of 0.5 lux illumination.
And have arrived at a fundamental battle over who owns the night. The astronomical community is fighting for the survival of their field.
Environmentalists are fighting for nocturnal ecosystems.
Hmm. And regulators are trying to balance the pace of innovation against shared human heritage. When you step outside later this year and look up at the night sky, there is a very real chance you will see a brand new artificial star staring back at you, moving across the constellations.
It represents a profound shift in how humanity interacts with the space directly above our heads, transitioning it from a shared natural resource to an industrialized commercial zone.
Exactly that. And I want to leave you with one final thought to mull over. Something that is entirely grounded in the economic realities outlined in Majid's report.
Right, the alternative revenue streams.
Yes. We've spent a lot of time analyzing the startup's pitch for solar energy and disaster rescue. Applications that sound inherently noble, even if the physics of the light diffusion make them impractical.
But the source material explicitly lists another highly potential revenue stream for this technology.
Commercial advertising.
Given the massive capital expenditures required to maintain an orbital constellation, advertising is perhaps the most lucrative application on their entire blank map.
And easily the most culturally disruptive.
Without a doubt.
Think about the economics we just broke down. A local solar farm cannot justify spending millions of dollars to buy 0.5 lux of weak dispersed light.
But you know who has that kind of expendable marketing capital?
Global mega corporations. So I want you to ask yourself, what happens in 5 years when a massive multinational brand realizes they can simply outbid the industrial sector, hijack a 5-kilometer-wide beam of orbital light, and project a massive glowing corporate logo directly over your city at 2 a.m.
It is a chilling prospect, but based on the regulatory precedent set 5 days ago and the financial pressures of commercial spaceflight,
it is a scenario firmly within the realm of possibility.
Unfortunately, yes.
It is absolutely something we're all going to have to keep a very close eye on. Thank you so much for joining us for this deep dive into the source material. Keep looking up, at least while the sky is still dark.